The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon. I am Vina Jones Cox, and this is Real Life Real Estate Investing, where every week of every year for so many years now, this is our 28th year, I think, on the air. Anyway, we've been bringing you the information and inspiration you need to start or grow your own real estate investing business. And today, we're going to be talking about a strategy. We're going to be talking about a strategy that not everybody is familiar with. It's not super well known the way like renting properties would be or wholesaling or retailing. But, you know, enough people have done it for enough time that it's a pretty well established thing. It's called an installment sale. And we're going to talk today about the pros and cons and some of the things that people miss about installment sales with a very experienced investor who has had a lot of years of kind of figuring this thing out and perfecting it. Before we get started, just a couple things that are going on in the world right now. The Real Estate Investors Association of Greater Cincinnati has its monthly nationwide chapter meeting this coming Thursday on Zoom. The topic is how to stop doing subject twos wrong. And it is myself, an attorney who deals in real estate transactions, and a former attorney who has dealt with a whole bunch of subject to transactions. And we're going to try and, I don't know, we're going to end up bursting some people's bubbles because there is just a whole lot of really bad information out in the world right now about the correct legal ethical way to do subject to deals. You can join us on that meeting by going to CincinnatiRIA.com, clicking on the Thursday calendar, and just, you know, signing up, and then you'll get a link from Zoom. Next Monday, also on Zoom, Cincinnati RIA is for the first time, I think, ever in its history, opening up the Creative Finance Focus Group to non-members. Most of the focus groups are for members only. For this one meeting only, non-members can attend. And the topic is the problem with creative deals. It's about the things that can go wrong, that commonly go wrong with deals like owner-held mortgages, private loans, things like that. Again, information is at CincinnatiRIA.com. That would be Monday's Creative Finance Focus Group. Just go there, click the calendar event, fill out your name and email, and it'll send you a link. So today's topic, installment sales. I have with me to kind of try and sort these as much out as we can in about 50 minutes, Mr. Dave Corsi, who is the president of the Metro Real Estate Investors Association in northern New Jersey, in kind of the Newark-ish area. He's also a very long-time investor with over 40 years of real-life experience, real-life New Jersey experience, which is harder than other people's experience under his belts. He's also a former national candidate for office. And in fact, part of what we're going to talk about is some laws about installment sales that Dave is working very hard to get changed right now. He's joining us by phone. Dave, welcome to Real Life Real Estate. I can't hear Dave.
Dave?
But I'm also not hearing, usually if we lose them, we hear like a dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun sound, and I'm not hearing that either. So maybe we'll find him. And now I wish I had made my announcements later instead of... We're still trying to get Dave. Dave, can you hear us?
I can hear you.
There you are. Sorry. I think you could hear us, but we couldn't hear you was the problem.
Okay,
there was
I heard you. I heard you fine, and thank you for having me.
Yes. Appreciate you being here. Okay, so I should have thrown a jargon flag on myself at the beginning of the show when I said we're going to talk about installment sales. Because that's not a term that, like, everybody in the world even knows what it means. So when we're talking about installment sales, when we're talking about being a real estate investor who does installment sales, what are we actually doing?
Okay, what we're talking about is holding a mortgage on a property that, let's say you've owned it and you want to sell it, you're tired of being a landlord and want nice steady cash flow, and don't want the hassle of the toilets and tenants we hear about, then you say, okay, I am willing to hold a payment for you. Vina, you want to buy the house from me? That's great. Give me a down payment, and I will hold the mortgage for you. So it's a form of private financing. And you say, that's great. The problem becomes there's two sets of, quote, investors. There are the people who hold long-term, and there are people who buy and flip. Now, technically, people who buy and flip are not investors in the eyes of the IRS. We are dealers. We are holding inventory, and inventory, as I'm sure a lot of your listeners know, cannot take installment sale tax advantages. Meaning, if I'm in the business of buying and flipping a house, and I say, okay, I will hold a mortgage for you, as if I'm an investor long-term, as I receive my money, I am paying tax to Uncle Sam. However, if I am deemed a dealer by the IRS, that means I have to pay tax on my total profit in the year of sale. Mm-hmm. Now, let's say it was a $30,000 second mortgage I was holding profit, and I owed one-third to Uncle Sam, which would be $10,000. Even though I might have only received $200 a month from you, which would equal $2,400, I still have to come up with $10,000. So that means I still have to come up with another $7,600, which obviously puts a real hassle or problem in doing these kind of deals if they call you a dealer.
Well, and you just gave a light example, because like I have houses that I paid, I bought in 1996. And I paid, you know, $100,000 for them, and now they're worth $350,000. So if I were to sell it on an installment sale, my profit according to the IRS wouldn't be $30,000. It would be like $250,000. And I would, if I get called a dealer, which we'll explain more about after the break, I owe all that in year one, even though, I mean, what, that on a 350, so I sell it for 350 on an installment sale. What's my payment going to be? $3,000 a month? So I might get a total of $36,000 this whole year, but I owe over $100,000 in taxes. So.
Exactly. Right. And that's why we're trying to get the law changed.
Right. And we are gonna talk about the law. We're gonna talk about getting it changed, and we're gonna talk about just like, why do you wanna do this? Especially after these two just convinced me I'm gonna have a huge amount of tax to pay right at the beginning, which you're not. The key is don't get called a dealer. We're going to do that after we come back from the break, though. I want to give folks a chance to call about any questions that you have about installment sales, about this idea of let me stop owning this as a rental and actually let a homeowner have it, but I become the bank. I carry back the payments. Give us a call at 877-772-9658. Again, that number is 877-772-9658. You can also text us if you want at 513-432-4961. 513-432-4961. Or you can stop worrying about remembering all those numbers and just send us an email. It's venaradio@gmail.com. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones Cox. How do you tell that it is, in fact, live radio and not a podcast? Stuff happens. That's how. This is because everyone's like, oh, I really like your podcast. Yeah, it's not a podcast. It's live radio. And that kind of thing is how you can tell that it is live radio, because we obviously would have edited that out in post-production had it just been a pre-recorded podcast. So before we continue on, I actually just got some really good legislative news, at least for Ohioans, on my text. Those of you who have been members of the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association or one of its member groups for a really long time knows that for the last, oh my gosh, 10 years, OREA has been trying to get a law passed at the state level that would make the entire water billing system more fair, by which I mean have the water departments actually charge the people who are using the water instead of charge the people who own the houses where the people live who are using the water. It has been the case in Ohio for a century that the water departments were allowed to let Dave Corsi live in a house and use all the water, but then if Dave didn't pay the bill, Vina had to pay it because it's Vina's house. And we have felt like that was crazy. I mean, like, what other utility is that true? Like, I can't be billed for my tenants' cable and internet and electricity and gas, but I can be billed for my their water. Well, just got a text that House Bill 92, which is what we call the water bill, which is the one that limits the amount of abuse that water companies can hand over to rental owners, passed today. I'm making my own sound effects. Now that does not mean that it's over. Oh no, I actually get sound effects. Cool. That doesn't mean it's over because it still has to pass the Senate. But this means Ohioans, call your state senator and say, "Hey, House Bill 92 passed. That's awesome. Please pass it when it comes your way." Whatever House Bill they're calling it, or whatever Senate Bill they're calling it, because this is a huge positive change, and it means that our state folks are actually listening to those of us who provide about 78% of the single family rental housing in the whole United States about what our concerns are. So, Dave, sorry about that interruption, but that's
no problem.
That's huge for us. And we were talking about installment sales, and I'm afraid I don't want to like have scared off anybody by saying, "Oh my God, you're going to have to pay all these taxes at the beginning of the year." You said that there are there's a difference in how you're treated tax wise depending on whether you are a dealer, which means the IRS thinks all you do is buy and sell houses, or whether you're an actual investor, which means you mostly keep houses, but maybe you sold this one, right? Have I got that correct?
That's correct. In effect, what we always advise our people to do, and I do both, I buy houses, and most of what we've done is held property long term. We deal mostly in single family houses. But when I'm buying and fixing and flipping, that's done in a different entity. That's our dealer entity, if you will. Mm-hmm. And the other one is our long-term hold entity. And we tend to hold properties in a form of a land trust. Mm-hmm. But the important thing is to keep them separate. If nothing else, if you're in both businesses, please keep them separate. Because the IRS, if they tag you as a dealer, even if you've held a property, like Vina mentioned in 96, but they call her a dealer, and she's been taking depreciation all that time, if they call her in for an audit, chances are they are going to disallow all the depreciation, et cetera, she's been taking which means you would have a big tax bill and penalties and interest.
Big, big.
So make sure you separate your businesses properly.
Yeah, by entity. And that's, I think sometimes, and we've addressed this on the show before, I think sometimes people go crazy with like, I need a different entity for every property. But there are some good reasons to have more than one LLC, and this is one
right.
of them. One to flip and one to hold, so that it's very clear that I took one of my hold properties and I turned it into an installment sale where I did sell it, but I'm still taking payments. But the good thing is now, because I am not a dealer, I can pay the taxes as the income comes in, not all at one time. And that's a really stupid way of treating that kind of deal anyway. I mean, it's crazy to say, well, you only got $36,000 this year, but you also have to pay $115,000 in taxes on that same exact deal. That's crazy. So
exactly right.
So you're and I actually meant to put this more toward the end of the show, but since we're talking about it, you have been kind of heading over to Washington every so often to talk to the legislators about this and about changing this law.
Correct. Actually, I started, let me give a little background. Up until 1986 Tax Reform Act, it was all treated the same. In other words, if I was buying and flipping and holding mortgages for people, I pay tax as I received the money, irregardless if I was considered a dealer or an investor. Tax Reform Act of 1986 changed that and said, okay, if you're a dealer, you have to pay tax in year of sale. Back around 1990-91, for all you folks who were around, you'll remember there was a real estate recession on the Resolution Trust Corporation and all that. There was a congressman from Pennsylvania, the Gettysburg area, who proposed a change to the tax law that would allow builders to hold mortgages and take the installment sale tax rules to use those. So I went to visit him and said, well, that's great. I said, however, there are people like me who not necessarily are building new homes, but we're rehabbing old ones, revitalizing neighborhoods, et cetera. And this would benefit us as well, because right now under the tax law, we're dealers and it doesn't make sense for us to do the deal. He agreed with me and he put a bill in Congress. Unfortunately, it didn't go anywhere. We tried again around 2000. And then again in 2008, I was a little older and wiser, and I went right to the House Ways and Means Committee, which are the ones who control the changes to the tax law. And we got had meetings with those folks. We got a bill into the Ways and Means Committee that would have changed the law. And it was interesting because we had both sides, Democrat and Republicans, who were signing on. It made a lot of sense. Then we met with the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, which was Charles Rangel, his office. And the big question they had was, okay, it has to at least be revenue neutral. What are your projections? And I gave them my projections that it would actually bring in more money than the current way that dealers were paying tax. So they ran their numbers. They got back to me and said, they agree with you, which was a big deal, because they said usually people come in with proposals and the CBO knocks it down, says, no, that won't raise the kind of money. In this case, they actually agreed and said it would bring in more. So we thought, oh, God, this is great. We may have a clear path here. But unfortunately, it was the time of Dodd-Frank. And somebody had the bright idea of putting a provision in Dodd-Frank about not allowing anybody to do any seller financing at all. Obviously unconstitutional, but why let that get in the way of their ideas? So I was talking to Pete Fortunato about it. He said to me, well, stick AARP on them. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, think about it. There's a lot of senior mom and pops here who are planning on selling their property when they're ready to retire, and that will supplement their income. So we said, okay. We contacted AARP, and they kind of went to their congressman. And then they changed it to where they would allow you to do three a year, which still doesn't make sense, but okay, better than nothing. But we still weren't able to get that change to the dealer/investor part of the law. So now, once again, we are trying again. I've been having meetings with members of the Ways and Means Committee, their staff. I'm getting very, very good feedback.
How do we help? You've got hundreds and hundreds of people listening to you. Like, what do we do to help you along?
Right. Well, what we're doing is we're laying the groundwork right now, and then we'll probably, through Vena, be sending out a call to action for you to contact your local congressman, representative, and explain to them. And I will send Vena. I had written a white paper that's called a position paper, explaining why this is a benefit for everybody, for the community, et cetera. And I will send that to Vena, and I'm sure she'll be able to send it out. And then we would just ask you, you know, call to action, contact your local representatives and explain to them why this would be such a benefit for everybody involved. The other interesting thing they always ask me is who would be against the bill. And the thinking they asked me primarily were about builders and the banks. And normally what happened back at least in 10 years ago were the banks had no problem with it because they looked at us as being a buffer for them. Mm-hmm. If somebody was in trouble, they were expecting us, who were holding those second mortgages in many cases, that would keep their loan current and do the foreclosing ourselves. Well, you never want anybody to get in foreclosure, but they thought, hey, this will be a buffer. So they had no problem with it. The builders had no problem with it because they would have been included in the bill and realized instead of going under, they would take their 50 houses of unsold inventory and be able to create mortgages against them and get that cash flow going until things improved.
You're understating the banks that I've been around, their position. I've sat on panels where there have been bankers, and then there's been me representing somebody who also sells houses and carries financing. I don't make loans to buy houses. I have the house, and I let people make payments on it. And I sat on those panels going, oh, man, these bankers are not going to like what I'm about to say. And then afterwards they say, that's so great. Do you know how many people that, like, they come really close to qualifying and we can't qualify them because we're stuck with these qualifying mortgage rules and we have to, like, even if we want to take a chance on them, we can't do it. And you can do it. That's awesome. So,
right, and it creates more business for them, absolutely.
Sure, because ultimately, people who buy houses from me on installment sales want to go to the bank and get a loan. Like, you know, I typically am charging a little more interest than the bank would charge because I'm working with people who are a little more risky than what the bank will work with. But ultimately, their whole goal is go to the bank, you know, get their credit fixed, go to the bank and get a loan. So, Yeah. So, all right. You send me that position paper. I'll make sure that our folks have access to it. And then when you're ready for us to actually do something, let us know.
Oh, that would be great.
And we might even be able to help out with, we've got that. OREA has that system where we can just write an email and then everybody can just put in their names and everything. I don't want to speak for OREA, but I'm pretty sure they would agree to do that on something as important as this.
Right. And another benefit for us as investors, especially the ones who've been around for a while, if you're creating all these notes, as Vena, I'm sure, has talked to you guys about, there's amazing things you can do with mortgage notes, trading them, building on them, doing different things with them that can benefit everybody involved in a transaction. So it opens up a whole nother realm. And ultimately, the other important point we should make is if I'm selling a property on an installment sale, especially if I'm in a dealer category, I'm paying taxes on ordinary income, which was something that I stressed to Rangel's office. It's not even like I can take capital gains because I'm buying, fixing, and flipping. I'm a dealer, and I cannot take capital gains on dealer investments. So I'm paying ordinary income. So obviously they like that as well, but I'm more than willing to because you're not trying to hit me up for the whole thing up front.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very good. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about installment sales, less from the tax and political piece and more from the piece about, like, why would we want to do them in the first place? Like, what are the advantages of them? We will also answer any questions you have. Just call 877-772-9658 or send your questions to vinaradio@gmail.com. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones Cox. My guest is Dave Corsi. We've been talking a lot about the kind of legislative tax political side of installment sales up until now. And I meant to do it the other way around. I meant to, like, you know, tell all you guys about what they were and so on and then get into that stuff. But it's just, I don't know, it's more and more obvious all the time that small real estate investors have to stop ignoring or trying to get around the bad legislation that's out there. We gotta get in there and, like, talk about it, influence it, change it, because it's been too long. We've sat around on our hands going, I'll figure out a way around that for decades longer than we should have. And it's time to get together and support lobbyists and support people like Dave who are not even lobbyists, but are doing God's work for us. All of that stuff. So, Dave, installment sales. So you know, I just want to say you said the way you put it was, I have a house. I'm not like making a loan for somebody to buy a different house. I'm selling them my house on payments, and that's an installment sale. But then you connected it really strongly with mortgages. And I just want to point out that here in the Midwest, the most common way that that's done is actually through contracts for deed.
Right.
Same exact idea. Same taxation, same everything. I mean, there's the small difference between a mortgage and a contract for deed, which is, when does the buyer actually get the title? But for those of you who are going, what's this guy doing selling houses on mortgages? You may have heard it said as a land contract. So in your world, in Dave's world, why would you take a particular house and instead of renting it, sell it on an installment sale? What about that deal would make you say, no, not rental, installment sale?
Okay. A big part is, in New Jersey for years, our prices are obviously pretty very expensive. It is very hard to get a property to cash flow. We've for decades had the highest property taxes in the country. We have very high insurance costs, et cetera. So by the time you're done, a starter home in my area right now is about $700,000. And I'm not talking about these really big, nice houses. These are could be a Cape Cod, a ranch, and it's just very hard. And even before this last surge in prices, they were too expensive that with the rents would not justify. Your average property tax on your average rental home in these areas would be $7,000 or $8,000 a year. So when you add everything else up, the numbers don't make sense. So it becomes where, okay, what else could I do? Well, if the values are high and I can find the right properties, again, generally that need work, I can go in and create the value by buying, fixing, and selling it. And again, it would, because I'm going to sell it, because I can't rent it and make a cash flow. However, I could sell it. And let's say, even being, I know you talk a lot about subject two. Imagine I had a subject two. I got a nice 3.5% mortgage that I've taken over. I put money in, rehabbed it, and now I do in a form a wraparound mortgage at 7%. I can create a really nice spread, whereas that property would have barely, if possibly, made a positive cash flow. Chances are it would enough. Now I could be making a solid monthly cash flow from it. It's been a win-win for the person now living in the house because, as you mentioned, I made it possible for them to be able to get in, whereas the bank would have not been able to get them in. Mm-hmm. We can get them in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So sometimes it's just that the house is just not going to cash flow as a rental.
The numbers don't work, right.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, that happens in places other than New Jersey, Dave, because
right. No, I know.
Like, I'm going out later to see a house that probably has an after-repaired value of about $450,000, and it's in a
right.
It's in a really desirable area. Somebody would love to rent it, but you can't get enough rent to support the payment on a $450,000 house. So what might work for this, and this was my first thought when I saw the house, was somebody would love to own that without having to go to the bank, because maybe they can't go to the bank. They do have good income, but maybe their credit's not great, or maybe one of my favorite kinds of people to sell to are people who are self-employed.
Yep.
It's just tough to get a bank loan, especially in the first 2 years after you have started a business for yourself. So, so price of the house is one reason. You mentioned another one. Sometimes, you know, you just get to the point with your real estate business that you're like, I kind of want to retire. And owning 60 rentals is not retirement, but
exactly. You know, I own a fair amount of rentals, and right now, and I promised my wife, anything I buy now is buy, fix, and sell, hold paper, et cetera, do all kinds of things like that, which is another reason I really want to get the tax law changed.
Because you promised your wife.
And even the properties I've held, long term, if I turn around and just sell them, give people really good terms on them, make them really affordable, good terms, my cash flow, monthly cash flow will double right off the bat. And then I don't have to worry about babysitting the property. And I do have very good tenants. I really don't have any bad tenants. So if I sell those properties and I can double my cash flow, they're happy. Now, Vina, you know I do a lot of equity share type deals too. Mm-hmm. So I sometimes combine an installment sale with an equity share type situation, which – obviously, we're not going to get into
jargon
now,
flag. Like, wait that. A second. No, you don't. You don't get just go. Oh yeah, let me introduce this whole new topic 3/4 of the way into the show and just say. But we're not getting into that.
Okay, real quick. What we'll do is, I remember I just said subject to. If I take over Venus subject to mortgage and I then sell it to Sarah, I do a wraparound mortgage, but my wrap may be an interest only payment. Coming from Sarah, however, because I'm making it really affordable for her, I might be getting 50% of the future upside. Mm-hmm. So I have an amortizing loan below it. I have a fixed rate mortgage wrapping it. I'm making positive cash flow each month. Along with that, I have 50% of the upside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Pete calls that making it possible for people to live in houses they can't afford.
Exactly,
because you have
champagne taste beer budget.
Well, you have a young
Zach
couple
Millerson.
That you got a young couple that can't afford the payments on that $700,000 house. So you make them payments as if it were a $500,000 house that
exactly.
They could afford but can't find.
Right.
And then the way you make that up is at the back end of the deal.
Right, and a lot of times we'll put say that $200,000 just mentioned on the sideline.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm already okay, I'm safe, I may not have no money invested then at that point, or a little amount, and I keep that $200,000, as you're saying, on the sideline until eventually I either get cashed out, they sell it, or whatever happens.
Mm-hmm.
There's a million things you can do with it.
Yep, absolutely. So you keep saying that your cash flow is better
right
when you sell on an installment sale. And part of it,
right.
Part of it is just that, especially in your part of the world, people just pay more to own a house than they would pay to rent the same exact house. But
right.
I think there's another piece of that too, which is that homeowners don't call you and say, hey, my furnace is broken, right?
Amen. Yep. I had to put on 3 roofs last year because we switched insurance companies and my roofs weren't that bad. My roofer even said there's nothing wrong with these. But insurance companies said you got to change them, so I had to spend over $30,000.
Mm.
And again, if it was somebody who owned a house, I am now just a mortgage or note holder. It's on their responsibility. What I find is over the years of being a landlord, it's not my fixed costs that get me. It's every month we always have something break that we're responsible for that, you know, nothing, the tenant didn't do anything wrong, but things break, things need to be replaced. The shower finally, you know, the valves start leaking and you got an old tile shower, you have to rip everything out to get to it. And it's just all those expenses I find that really eat into your cash flow. And if you're simply acting as the bank And you, that's not your concern. It's the concern of the user or slash the buyer homeowner.
Mm-hmm.
So your cash flow is staying nice and steady. And my thinking is, okay, if I need more write-offs, simply buy another house that I think would make a really good rental. Maybe it only will break even, but it'll give me the shelter I'm looking for if I need that.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Love it. When we get back from the break, we're going to answer some questions that have come in to vinaradio@gmail.com. We can also take text questions. I don't think we take phone questions in the last 10 minutes. We could take text questions at 513-432-4961. We'll be back right after this.
Support for WMKV comes from the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati, a nonprofit community of real estate investors with programs available for all levels of experience. More information about RIA and their meetings is available at 513-407-3137 or at CincinnatiREIA.com.
And we're back here at 545, still hanging in there at 42 degrees. The traffic monitor has three extreme issues, and they look like they're all wrapped around the same thing. So I'm going to try to condense it quickly. 75 northbound, the off-ramp to eastbound Norwood Lateral 562 exit 7. The off-ramp exit ramp is closed. Closed, you cannot get anywhere. And that has actually repeated itself twice. So again, the off-ramp from 75 southbound to eastbound Norwood Lateral is closed. Also, the Norwood Lateral eastbound at 75 to Paddock Road exit, or State Route 4 Paddock Road exit, that is closed due to an accident there. So there's an accident on the Norwood Lateral, and that has closed the ramp all the way around on 75. So if you have to get to the Norwood Lateral on southbound 75, exit earlier and find an alternate route.
Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones Cox. My guest today is Dave Corsi, and we're talking about selling properties using installment sales, which, by the way, is another, I mean, it's another creative strategy, right? It's another way of creatively doing real estate without banks. It just happens that in this case that you are being the bank for somebody else instead of looking for somebody else to be the bank for you, which brings me back to last week's topic, which was the Creative Finance Summit that's coming up May 1st, 2nd, and 3rd in Atlanta, or you can also attend that virtually. And at the end of the fund drive last week, we thought that we had all the packages gone. It turns out in the shuffle, somebody got counted twice. So we do actually have one of those packages left for somebody who wants to get there by making a pledge to WMKV. If that sounds super interesting to you because you love all the creative stuff and you want to be around all the people who have all the creative stuff, go to WMKVFM.org, scroll to the bottom of the page, look for the pledge for Creative Finance Summit, and then once somebody has done that one, it will go away. So, Dave, question from Randy, who, from his area code, if we can trust those things anymore, is from the Charlotte, North Carolina area. He says, I have a property I've owned for many years. I would like to sell it on an installment sale, but what I'm worried about is that my buyer is actually going to cash me out within a couple of years by refinancing with a bank. That will accelerate my income and force me to pay all those taxes all at once. What terms can I put into the note that might incentivize the buyer to continue to pay me monthly versus refinancing me out sooner than I would like? Can I do a prepayment penalty?
Randy, that last part was what I was going to say. You need to check with North Carolina. For instance, in New Jersey, we cannot put any prepayment penalty. What I have found is maybe I can transfer to another property if need be. And I found when people have paid me off early, and again, I knew all the people, so I went and talked to them. I said, out of curiosity, why'd you pay me off? And I never thought about this, and I kicked myself after credit card debt.
Mm.
They had built up a big credit card, and they said, hey, I know taking out a 30-year mortgage again is not really great, but my $500 credit card payment now will go down to $50 a month, and I can't afford that. Mm-hmm. And I kept thinking, I wish I knew that. And for a couple people, I caught it because I had a couple people we've sold houses to who I'm almost like their financial advisor, but call me up and say, hey, Dave, somebody's asking me to do this. Is this a good idea or not? And a couple of them who were elderly called me up. And what I did was I just lent them more money because it's an equity share deal where we're going to end up with the house back because we option to buy it back.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it was a great affordable deal for them. They had somewhere to live for as long as they wanted. We're getting the property back. So we made a deal where we and gave them really good interest rate because I didn't want the loan paid off and have to go through that hassle.
And let me say, Randy, I'm not even so I guess Dave and I are both assuming that you are looking for an owner occupant to live in this house and that not that you would be selling it to an investor. Cause if you're selling to an investor, like all the Dodd-Frank rules are just off. You can do, you can pretty much, I mean, within the bounds of what South Carolina allows you to do, you can pretty much, you know, charge whatever rate you want and whatever terms you want and prepayment penalties and all the stuff. But with homeowners, I don't even think that you can do an interest-only loan under Dodd-Frank, much less have a prepayment penalty. I think you're looking for a stick, and what you want is a carrot. You don't want somebody to pay off your loan, give them an interest rate they can't get anywhere else. Give them soft terms that they can't get anywhere else. If they call you and say, I want to pay off my loan, give them a better interest rate than you gave them before. I mean, if it's really important to you not to pay those taxes in 3 years or something, then you give them a carrot. You don't give them a stick. Dave, one of the reasons that people pay me off, which always makes me sad, I would like to keep getting the payments instead of getting paid off.
Exactly.
Is they decided to buy another house and they're selling the one that I carried the loan on.
Right.
And so when I found out that that's the case, I say, well, do these new people want to just, you know, have me carry the financing too?
Exactly right.
So, yeah, Randy, there's very little you can do with homeowners in the way of what you're thinking, which is prepayment penalties. I think interest only is probably going to be a problem, but you can always, like, make it easy for them to stay with you.
Yes. One thing I'd like to mention, too, what Vina had said. Okay, if you cannot do interest-only loans under Dodd-Frank, watch what the mortgages do. Make it 10 years interest-only, and then it becomes a 20-year loan from year 11 through year 30. Mm-hmm. And that can be an inducement for people, and that can get you around possibly the interest-only loan. You have to look in your state, though, because there are rules within the state that you have to view besides Dodd-Frank.
Very true. Very true. Always, always, always consult with your legal, accounting, or other professional advisor before making any investment, just like we said at the start of the show. Randy has a second question. What are some reasonable terms in selling one of these deals in terms of things like points, interest, and length of the loan?
Okay, it kind of goes back to what Vina just said. I do not charge points. My closing costs will be a third of what if they went to a regular bank. So automatically they're thinking, why would I want to go to a bank when I'm getting a better terms with Dave on the property that he owns and knows, number one. Number two, the idea that, again, if you know how to work a financial calculator, I want to know what their hot button is. If you always have a price range, let's say you know a house is worth between 330 and 360. I know that I can really seduce them with a low interest rate. Okay, I'm going to put the house at 355 with maybe a 5.5% interest rate. If instead they are looking for the better price, I can put it at the 330 and maybe have a 6.99% interest rate. And if you pull out your calculator and do the math, the numbers come out almost exactly the same. The present value is pretty much the same. Mm-hmm. So the same thing we do when we're dealing with a seller who's going to hold paper for us, figure out what their hot button is. Is it they want to brag to their friends they got full price, or is it that they'd want to brag, hey, you've only earning 4% on your money in the bank. I'm earning 8%. Mm-hmm. You know, pick your poison.
Mm-hmm. Randy, the other thing is when you're selling to homeowners balloons, you said, what's the term length, which made me think you were thinking, well, I could carry it for 5 years and then there would be a balloon. You really need to go study what Dodd-Frank says about when you are selling to homeowners, what you are and aren't allowed to do. And maybe it's time to do another show about that. It's been right. A while since we did that, because people we were all very aware of Dodd-Frank and every single rule that it had back in 2012 when it first passed.
Right.
And now we've had an entire generation of real estate investors grow up who never was in that fight back then.
Right.
And they're like, when you say you can't do a balloon in a mortgage to a homeowner, they're like, what? Why not? Well, Dodd-Frank, what's that? So, yeah, might be time to do that show again.
The other thing, and Vina kind of touched on it too, it's amazing, but even people who have lent you money and are the saddest day they have with you is the day you pay them off, because
mm-hmm.
they get so used to getting that monthly cash flow. I know I don't like to get paid off. I do 50-year mortgages with people, and I'm nearly 70 years old now. And people look at me and they'll say, you think you're going to be around in 50 years? And I tell them, no, but I have kids and I have grandkids. And maybe one day when I'm gone, my kids and grandkids will go, he's not as wacky as we thought he was. He actually was smarter than we thought. You know? But like Vina said, she doesn't like getting paid off. I don't want to get paid off. We all live based on our monthly expenses. What good will it do for them to pay me off and I put the money in a bank or somewhere else? I am perfectly happy. You know, one of the things that Trump took criticism for was when they floated a 50-year mortgage. And I didn't understand why people were upset, because in my mind, if that person, the only way they can afford that house is a 50-year amortization and it was affordable to them, they are preferring doing that than renting for the next X number of years and having the money totally not do anything for them.
Well, I'll tell you why people were criticizing that, because on a 50-year mortgage, if you want to sell the house within 5 years, unless there's been massive inflation, you can't sell because you owe more than the house is worth. That's why people were upset.
And that could be. And exactly right. That's what I mean by circumstances. But if somebody who's planning on staying somewhere a long time, it isn't necessarily bad. It's like a reverse mortgage. Reverse mortgages aren't really good or bad per se. They're neutral. It depends on how it's being used and why they're being taken out.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of investors, we emulate what a reverse mortgage will do for a seller. You know, somebody elderly who wants to stay in their house, instead of them getting a reverse mortgage, we'll structure a deal with them that stimulates that, because that's their best thing that they're looking for at the moment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You're not doing it to them. You're doing it saying, okay, what is their situation? What are we trying to accomplish here? Well, we want to stay in the house. Okay, here's what we can do. Will this work for you? Oh, that'll work. And then you let everybody know. If you have family members, anybody, you let everybody know what the situation is, so nobody thinks anybody's taking advantage of anyone.
Absolutely. Dave, we are unfortunately out of time. I'm going to wrap up the show with a great example of why you should not ask AI about real estate, or you shouldn't trust its answers. Catherine sent in a very short question. It says, installment sale versus seller financing. What's the difference between the two? Is it just terminology? And the suggested reply that my AI wants me to send back to her is, oh, there's a big difference. Installment sales are usually a third party lender. Yeah, that's not true. It is.
Huh?
We're talking. I know AI has it wrong. I understand. Catherine, we're talking about the same thing. What you are saying is seller financing is exactly what Dave is talking about when he talks about installment sales. But thank you for your question, Dave. Thank you for being with us today. Appreciate you. Listeners, don't forget the Cincinnati RIA meeting Thursday night, how not to do subject to. Get your seats, your virtual seats. It's online at CincinnatiRIA.com. We'll be back next week with more information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. Until then, happy investing.
Thanks for having me.